Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. I'm your host, Nick Pollock, and joining me in his, I'm going to say it's a teal robe this week, it's Paul Sporer. Hi.
How's it going, Nick? I've expanded the collection. You know, I've got the Adidas track pants in virtually every color. I got to get the robes to match. So,
yes.
You know, we got to start expanding the collection.
And what would you say those slippers are?
The color?
Just I see a design. I see like a whole thing here today.
Purple crushed velvet. They're comfy as can be. You cannot believe the comfort on your feet. Don't need to wear socks with them. They keep you plenty warm.
Yeah.
Especially here by the fire, of course.
Of course. And I have my Scoobledoo slippers on.
That's so funny.
It's just super, super cozy today. But what are we talking about? We are going to be talking about the young dudes. We're going to be talking about the guys who are up right now, and then maybe talk about some who are around the corner and if you are going to be stashing them. And I think the first one is a guy, well, really there actually are two today, believe it or not, who are actually maybe three. Oh, this is unbelievable. We're starting to get to that point. It's June, where we get a lot of the younger pitchers coming up, having opportunities. And if we saw it last year, some of them stick and we didn't realize it. We didn't know who a guy was and all of a sudden he's doing well. I mean, look at Mitchell Parker right now. He's actually doing pretty well. And none of us, I mean, I certainly wasn't aware of him before the season in my top 400.
Me neither, but he stands out because I think of the rarity of it. You know, that's been a talking point this year is that like we're not getting the same volume. You're right that it's going to start to turn the corner here in June as teams are starting to pile up some injuries or even just trying to, you know, we call it like phantom IL or whatever, put a guy on the IL maybe for a little less than needed reason just to get through the 6 month grind. So you got to start calling guys up, but we just don't have the bevy of names this year. And it's just been so drastically different from last year that anybody that, you know, might've gone light on pitching and thought, well, I'm just going to be active in the pickups this year. They're scraping. But could we be at a turning point here where now we got a batch of names here? And that's kind of what we're going to be focused on today is if these guys, if they can do what people did last year, because there's not going to be a Yuri Perez and Tanner Bibee, but can they at least be viable for you in leagues that aren't just deep formats?
Right. I think this year, obviously, Jones and Skeens are standing above all at the moment.
Sure. But they were both drafted.
Sure. And there's also Jackson Jobe down the line is the other one here. There is some potential from a few of them. I remember talking to James Anderson in Florida, mentioning just, this is the, this is 2020 kind of seeing its impact here of delaying guys a bit. And then all of a sudden all at the same time coming up. Cause you have your Bobby Millers from last year, your Gavin Williams, your Tanner Bibee, your et cetera, et cetera. Just sees all these young guys. Even Mason Miller was just Okay, great. Awesome. So we might be seeing more of it. We might be seeing more aggressive promotions. We saw with Spencer Schwellenbach. And this is one of the things I'm starting to realize is we just released our minor league pitch type tool for PLV, which is incredible. That means we can look at AAA starters and get all the fun data that we want and actually put PLV numbers to them relative to major leaguers, is incredible. You can say like, he's a really good slider. Like, well, we can tell you if it is or not relative to major league performance as opposed to, you know, the quality that they're seeing in the minors. The problem is that it's only AAA data. And while that's incredibly helpful, we're starting to see that a lot of prospects are skipping AAA.
Yep.
Something that we mentioned, and I on the craft in one of the earlier episodes about how teams may actually be hoarding that data. That is, they don't want to put them in AAA, not because it's necessarily the PCL, but because they don't want to reveal their StatCast data publicly.
That's really interesting because these days you're a call away once you're in AA. And that's been a change that I've had to adjust to the last couple of years of realizing that. Like it used to be, okay, you hit AAA, you're that call away. But if you're good enough and the team values you enough, AA is very much, I don't want to say it's equal to AAA, but it for a lot of prospects, you're right there ready to go. And that's such an interesting spin if they are trying to protect some of that data, right? Because in this data age, there are no hidden edges, right? Teams have proprietary things, things that they like to do, but a lot of it can be generally modeled. We can get some ideas. Few guys come out of nowhere if you have the data, like the data that you guys have at PitcherList. But if you're not getting any of it at double A, throw some sneak attacks. Drew Thorpe's the big one tonight who goes for his MLB debut coming over to the White Sox in the Dylan Cease deal. I don't know if you want, you were going to finish a point, so we don't have to get into names yet, but that is really, really intriguing to me that that could be the reason behind it, is to kind of get a little edge again.
Yeah, he didn't even mention that some teams are dealing it in a way between each other.
Oh, wow.
Like, you want your WSU, I'll take yours, you know, and so on and so forth. And it's just, it's bonkers.
That's an underrated aspect of the game, is like the GM relationships. You know, we see certain 100%. Teams link up for so many different trades, and like they probably hate others. Like, let's just be honest about it. There's probably teams that they do not get along with in any way, shape, or form. So the cliques within the front offices would be a fascinating thing to know about, right? Like, I'd love to see the
100%.
What is it, Charlie from Always Sunny with his board with the red with the red yarn connecting all the relationships. He hates them, he loved them.
Oh
yeah, to try to figure it all out. But anyway, go ahead.
Let's just start with the Yankees and the Pirates.
Okay.
So right. So it's really hard at times to pinpoint those guys specifically. I think it's just so easy. We were right there, ready to do it, and then now we're shifting away from it. So we could still see those absurd guys pop up this year. It's not out of the question. And I also do believe that teams are more aggressive and willing to make that jump than they were before. So at least we have that going for us.
But to your other point, though, about not having the data, my only point on them is not that they can't come up, it's that they will not be known necessarily.
Right. Well, exactly.
They're going to have to do something at the big league level, Mitchell Parker style, to get on the radar, as opposed to last year. We knew that these were well-regarded prospects across the prospecting industry, Fangraphs, PitcherList, MLB Pipeline, et cetera, it's James Anderson, et cetera, et cetera. We're all ranking these guys high, so we knew to expect something.
Yeah.
We don't know. Even Drew Thorpe isn't quite that kind of name.
Right. So going back to Drew Thorpe, good segue there. We have a spring training where his changeup was, that's the main thing with Drew Thorpe. And generally my philosophy is don't go after changeup first pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin Stone being the major that one was, in his first
that
year.
Big combo.
Ryan Pepiot, actually, his first season, there was a lot of just inconsistent changeup and everything else didn't come through. Obviously, Ryan Pepiot now is absurdly good for two
reasons. His command was a bigger concern than his pitch arsenal for me with
Pepiot. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, now Pepiot added 2 inches of more velocity and throws upstairs with the four seamer. It's crazy. Drew Thorpe, what is actually really concerning was he was supposed to be like 93 to 95. And in spring training, I saw him at 89 and 90. I don't know if that's changed. I don't know if it is different. And also, is the other stuff good enough pitching for the White Sox or so? I'm personally not really caring about this from Drew Thorpe. I also remember back in the day when it came to prospects, until like maybe 3 years ago, maybe two, my whole rule was I am not going to discuss a prospect until he arrives in the majors, until I see him and I get that. And
that was totally valid.
Yeah.
And I still think that there is some validity to that in the shallower formats too. And we talk about our, you know, different focuses on 12 and 15s that we generally share with our work. And so that could be part of the difference because, you used to be like, well, who is this guy? He's nothing yet. And what I mean by nothing is like, he's not on our realm. But these days with the way things get picked over in the waiver wire, you almost got to be on some level of the prospects to at least know them so that when they do come up, you can jump quickly. But there is that discussion of like stashing. I know we're going to get into that in the second portion of, you know, do you hold a Jackson Jobe in a 10 or 12 teamer?
Yeah.
Or should you be cycling through the, I'll keep using his name, Mitchell Parkers of the world that are pitching and at least doing things in the big league level right now. So that's a tough, that's a difficult part of those shallower formats.
For Drew Thorpe, I mean, what are your expectations? Obviously, you guys are going to be listening to this after Drew Thorpe goes. There's also Jonathan Ken going again tonight. There's Louis Varland returning as well. Both of those guys have already showcased themselves this year, and I don't have the highest hopes for either one. Varland in his triple game, not so good.
Doubleheader. Yeah. How's Cannon going? Isn't he a White Sox as well?
That is a great
point.
He's going tomorrow. That must be what it is. So Cannon's going tomorrow. Right? I just wrote about him for the streamers and I realized that that's for tomorrow's game. But right. So Cannon showing up again, he's a sinker guy. I don't have high expectations there. I don't really think it's worthwhile. Maybe in your 15s for Sunday, but we'll talk about that one another time. Louis so Barland isn't going to command.
I'll make it easy real quick on the White Sox. If they're not baseline doing something that Fetty can do, baseline, I'm not interested. Pretty much got to be like crochet level for me to be really interested. I'm talking about like with their statistical profiles. Mm-hmm. Fetty's like that low level because he's putting up good enough ratios that even if the wins aren't there, and by the way, he is 4-1. So shouts to him and the White Sox, and Crochet has 6 wins. So, you know, the two guys that are good do have some wins, but there's not going to be that many to go around. I just don't believe that Drew Thorpe and Jonathan Cannon bring enough to the table with such low win probability that I can really get on board. So my cutoff right now is if I don't think you can be Eric Fetty, I don't even care when you're on one of those crummy teams.
Yeah, I understand that. And Drew Thorpe, again, with all of these, I have what I call the shag rug, a young man's floor. That is, they are going to be more volatile because it's their rookie year. We don't really know how, you know, we always think that command is going to be worse for rookies in their first year. So that means that the generalized floor for those pitchers is worse. And that means that in order to endure that, you need to have a ceiling that is worthwhile to counter it. So I personally don't think that will be Drew Thorpe. I don't have high expectations tonight. That said, the Mariners are bad against changeups. Maybe it's just lefty changeups. I got to look more into that. But maybe Drew Thorpe has it. I don't know. I'm not really... Yeah, I don't have high expectations like you, I think, for Drew Thorpe.
Yeah, I can't really get there right now.
So I do want to turn to the two guys on Atlanta. That is Spencer Schwellenbach and Hurston Waldrep. Before this Waldrep start, what were your expectations for him?
Minimal, but it kind of goes the other way. So I'm glad we brought them up next because now they're on a great team. So their threshold of what they've got to do for me to be interesting, Waldrep and Schwellenbach, is a bit lower because I do have a higher win probability. So, you know, they carry the same risks that you're talking about, the shag rug, meaning the floor can be in the ground, but the upside is also there. And then they can kind of meander their way to some wins with some 5-inning, 3 or 4 earned run type of outings. So I did have some intrigue, though I will say with Waldrep specifically, I do have some general reliever risk long term. So for him specifically, Waldrep, I wasn't as enamored with it. But for these two guys being on the Braves, he and Schwellenbach, I am generally interested. So my interest level is like, okay, I'm gonna at least do the due diligence and see if I need them. But then when I deep dove, I'm like, okay, I think Waldrep might actually be a reliever and Schwellenbach's just kind of dece. And so I put in a cursory bid on Schwellenbach. And in the main event, I don't believe Waldrep was available yet because if you weren't drafted and then cut, you can't be picked up until you pitch. Right. And if you pitch on Sunday, you can't be picked up till the following week, which he did pitch on Sunday and he pitched poorly. So we'll have to see what he does this week to see what kind of interest Hurston Waldrep generates.
Yeah, so this is tough because, right, I was very much reliever focused with Waldrep. I think his command is rooted in, it's just violent a bit with how he has delivery. Splitter is surprisingly still somewhat consistent for being a splitter. It's above average as far as being able to harness the thing. But the four-seamer doesn't have good shape at all. Even though it looks kind of pretty, it doesn't stay up. It doesn't. It's not good extension. It's not the best angle, all that stuff. So that paired with a slider that has improved, but it's not really one of those, oh man, ho ho, look at this slider kind of pitch.
Yeah.
And maybe that's enough. Those two pitches getting enough strikes to settle the splitter. I think it's going to be volatile. Even inside that game, he got through 3 innings relatively quickly. And I was a little surprised watching it. And then all of a sudden, I mean, things just didn't go his way against the Nationals. He shouldn't have been 7 earned runs, but it was a really bad pitch against Ruiz. That was for a home run. It was supposed to be an away fastball that came inside. It was just straight to the barrel of the bat. There were some walks in there that were just, he just lost guys. Hurston Waldrep, obviously MLB debut. You can't read into it too much, but it does. It was one of those where I was looking for something to convince me otherwise from my previous assessment. I didn't see that. That said, it could be better this week. I believe he gets the Rays, and
that's what I was going to ask you.
Well, for him,
does he?
Yeah,
because they've got six. Are they doing a little six rotation right now?
I mean, think about this. You have Renato Lopez, who has never started fully. You have Fried, who has the forearm stuff. Yep.
And I mentioned how many times Reynaldo Lopez has been pushed back. Remember the running meme of how he's had a two start like 50 times in a row. So they clearly don't want to go pedal to the metal with him. Yeah. So maybe they are a team that's set for a six. And I cut you off there, but I'm sorry, because I'm sure you were going to mention that Sale and Morton are old as heck and Fried has injury concerns. So they might be a team, even as a great team like this, that works for a six. I think my biggest challenge, what I assume the biggest challenge would be to run a six, is to get the veterans on board. So if Sale and Morton are cool with it, and even Fried, you know, he's 30 years old. If those veterans are cool with it, why not? I think I think it actually makes some sense for the Braves to consider a six.
It also is a scenario where Atlanta's been looking for their fifth starter for a while. Since this writer went down. And I can imagine Schmellenbach and Waltrip just being in a battle at the moment. They just want to play it out.
And get more than one start, right?
Like, right, and just kind of see, cool,
kick Waltrip like after three or one four,
see how it's going to go. Not to mention Schmellenbach now has to get the Orioles, and that's just not really fair. And they'll probably let him go again one more time, at least against the Tigers. Which that might be really good, because between the two of them, I prefer Spencer Schmellenbach. I think his four pitch arsenal is more complete. He's more polished across all of them. He doesn't really have that overwhelming splitter that Waltrip has. I think that's the best pitch of the lot. However, the cutter is really nice. It's a really good cutter against lefties. He has a solid slider that goes against righties. It's 95 plus on the four seamer upstairs. That is fine. It's not really in exceptional shape, but it should be fine. Changeup is in there, I believe, as well. I always forget the fourth pitch with Schmellenbach. I think it's a changeup. But those four pitches do make a full arsenal for Schmellenbach, regardless of if it's a changeup or a curve. And that speaks to sustainability, I think, more than the chaotic energy of Hurst and Waldrep.
Yes.
So I would imagine
Statcast has five pitches.
A sinker's in there too. For
they got four seam, cut, slide, curve, and change. You said curve or change.
Well, there you go.
They got both of them, but it's more of a show me change at 8%.
Show me change against lefties, right? Let's see. I mean, we obviously have whatever Statcast has is on the pitchless player pages, because that's their data that we get from Sport Radar. And yeah, we have the same thing too, but it looks like the curve is the bigger one at 18% usage.
Definitely.
And actually near a 60% strike rate, which is far more consistent than I expected it to be.
And Schwalbach has impressed. And he's that guy that I think, because he has a complete arsenal and things for righties and lefties, that can be that guy who goes five innings. And even when he gives up three, four earns sometimes, you're on the hook for the potential win, because Atlanta's a good team. And I know they've lost Acuna and the offense been struggling, but you're still going to bet on that team to win more than not.
Absolutely. So that's kind of how I see it with those youngins. I mean, there are others that are interesting here. There was a lot of hype for Adam Mazur. Did you get a chance to watch Adam Mazur?
Yeah, and I was unimpressed. I didn't deep dive. I only watched a few innings, but where was the hype coming from?
Yeah,
I'm not trying to be nasty. I'm really not. I just feel like, is he not just a back end rotation guy?
Well, okay. So the idea of Adam Mazur, what they called him on the broadcast, which I can see, is a mini George Kirby. He had been a major command guy, and being a command guy throwing 94, 95 is better than what you normally hear, which is like 91 or so being a command guy.
Yeah, Kyle Hendricks types.
So with that in mind, then you have a four pitch mix of four seamers and then the sliders, changeups, curveball. You can go all across the zone. That's the whole idea. And what we've seen so far is obviously not that, because walks have been all his jam. And that's kind of typical of MLB debuts, right? Or just being a rookie, is you are going to struggle a bit, especially if you are a command focused one. That's going to get worse. And oh no, now things are going to get bad because you aren't doing the one thing that you're supposed to be really good at.
Yeah.
I can see this as a mini Kirby in some sense, but it's going to take some time, I think, for Mazur to actually settle into anything like that. I would give him a tiara in the sense of, hey, you are a serviceable Toby in a 12 teamer at some point. I absolutely see that with his four pitches and throwing a good enough fastball that you don't really see from a kitchen sink kind of guy. But as of now, I'm not really that interested in Adam Mazur until that comes to fruition.
Yep, I'm totally with you there. I don't think he really needs to be picked up in really any format except for maybe NL only. Of course, you know, those sorts of AL and NL only leagues are taking anybody with a pulse.
Sure. And we have two more guys that have arrived, which are DJ Herz and Cade Povich. We're going to talk about them. And of course, other guys who are on the fringe of coming up to the majors after this break. So we have DJ Herz, who then showed up. Two starts now for Herz. It's really kind of fun. You put Logan Webb and you put Herz together and you have Jesse Plemons. It's pretty amazing. It's just them two together. And Herz in the
Brandon Woodruff too, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
I didn't know DJ Herz had that. Oh yes, I totally see it. But Woodruff and Webb were the ones that I always go with.
It's been in the preseason. Obviously, I was like, okay, Mackenzie Gore is kind of cool. But then it was Josiah Gray, Trevor Williams, Patrick Corbin, and Jake Irvin, who is not the current Jake Irvin, which is an interesting thing of just curveballs looking really good and then competitive enough other pitches. And that's a Vargas rule. But I mean, would you assess Irvin the same way, by the way?
Yeah. I've elevated him to let's ride this and see where it goes.
Sweet. Gets your Tigers next. Oh, man. I called DJ Herz the number two pitcher on the Nationals in the preseason because it was just, why the heck not, right?
Yeah.
And then Mitchell Parker showed up and Jake Irvin's doing his thing. Now that we see Herz, the command has been terrible, but are there things to pull from this that maybe suggest that Herz can get it together?
So again, you're dealing with the fact that, you know, not on a great team, so has to bring something to the table because you're not necessarily going to get the wins. I got to be honest, though, I had a little bit of relief risk with him, too. You know, when these guys got two good pitches, modest command, it's easy, right? It's easy to do that. And I understand that teams don't want to throw them into the bullpen right away. You have to give a shot, see if you can develop a guy and bring that third pitch along and turn them into somebody who can be a true starter. And I like that he has a changeup, Herz. You know, they got the changeup piece there. That's usually the last piece that they need. But I'm just not sure that it's getting there for me with Herz. Like, what breaker are we looking at here? Doesn't he throw like kind of a hybrid cutter slider?
Yeah, well, he throws two. He throws a cutter that's like 87 and then a
okay, by the way, they are like
around 80. Yeah. But it kind of makes me feel like it's a slider and a curve, but then again, it's changed up to 82, which matches more with the sliders, and traditionally sliders and changeups are the same. So it is interesting to see that. He kind of rotated between the two. The first start was cutters for Herz, and the second start was more sliders. And I can see how it works. Like, the four-seamer is not a bad four-seamer. This thing will get whiffs, 93 miles per hour, but it's an interesting angle. He does get kind of low on it. He has good extension. That can work overall for Herz, but he doesn't locate it well. It looked super erratic. The changeup was filthy at times. I will not forget the 2-0 changeup he threw. Second batter of the game to Alonso. Ah, that's the one. Lindor start. There it is. The typical MLB debut, guys. I was trying to remember this last night on the corner. Was the first batter is always the most anxious one, especially against a veteran. Because they know that if they just wait, probably will be like a 2-0 or 3-0 count. And then you take the first one. If it's a fastball in there, okay, cool, 3-1. The next one's going to be a 3-1 fastball. Like 9 times out of 10. Lindor saw that. It was right down the middle. He hit it for a double. And it's just, oh my gosh, every time. Every single time, the fifth pitch, always. That's what was a home run, 3-1 fastball from Mats to Brandon Phillips. But then at 2-0, the next batter, Alonso, goes chasing a changeup out of the zone. I'm like, that was the fun, right? So there is something there for DJ Herz, but as of now, I mean, get some Marlins next.
That's very intriguing. I could take a shot on that.
The thing is, do we trust the command to be there enough to be efficient?
No.
And go more than four innings.
But it is the team can bridge the gap there, the opponent, because of their terribleness, they can make somebody like DJ Herz look better. So it is a situation where I can get on board with it. Like, I'll give them like a 15 team and probably even the 12 team X to where in my daily SP chart, where you can take the shot on this this weekend for DJ Herz, see where it's at. There is still plenty of risk with it, but Miami is so bad that if you got anything I can latch on to, I'm going to give you a shot against Mike.
Yeah, it's just about the strike rate. It's about 60% strike rate thus far for all of his pitches, which is just no. You need at least 63, if not like 65. Otherwise,
and that's where Herz's reliever risk comes in for me, is that he just does not consistently command.
And the problem is, like, is Herz reliever quality? Like, Herz is such an interesting one where are you... Like, he's not electric enough. He's not just, oh my gosh, you stick him in there. And maybe you get a velocity jump if he does. But it, there isn't really a big breaker to it. It is does feel more like a starter, and they're going to try and turn him into that, I think. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, when you're a changeup focused, it's harder to turn into a reliever, I think, unless it's like a split change or something.
That's a great point. I totally agree there. And that's, you know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Then, you know, what breaker is he going to work on? Does he maybe get rid of one of them and just focus on a third there for DJ Hurst instead of trying to have the four pitches? That's why I'm just kind of tepid on it. But again, I can get behind the Miami start. We'll see how that goes. But if it's another flame out, then I'm really stepping away for Hurst for the immediate future.
Totally get that. And with Cade Povich, where are you there?
With Cade Povich, it kind of goes back to the Schwellenbach situation where the team context is enough that I'll take the potential, you know, five inning, again, 3 to 4 runs, which is not terribly flashy, but because he's on Baltimore and the win probability is high, and there's still upside for him too, right? There's plenty of upside for Povich. So yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, it's tough in the short term because he does get Atlanta on Wednesday. But Atlanta is like, it's not as terrifying as it used to be.
Exactly. And this is even before Acuña that they were, they were kind of meandering a little bit offensively. Yeah. So now that you take out Acuña, again, it's still a team I respect. I think they have, you know, a chance to blow up anybody on a given night, but you don't have to immediately run. And when you are going with a good team like Baltimore for Povich, I do feel more comfortable taking the shot against Atlanta. So he will get a pretty decent recommendation tomorrow or tonight in the SP chart for his start tomorrow. He starts tomorrow, you said, right, for Povich?
Yes, he should go on Wednesday against against Atlanta opposite Schwellenbach.
So I'll feel pretty good. Yeah, I'm actually excited to see both them go then.
Definitely. I don't know how to feel about Povich because the four-seamer to me, I mean, it's fine. I thought it would be flatter and it's not. It's just a 0.7. High adjusted VA in that first game, which is steep, actually. Extension is below average, 29th percentile with that 6.3. The IVB isn't there. It's 14 to 15, 92 miles per hour. I mean, PLB hates it, 4.72.
Wow.
Overall, which is 20th percentile among all four seamers. So Cade Povich, you got to get more out of the curve and the cutter. But I mean, I do see a decent Toby in here. Like I see like, okay, cool. You're lefty with cutters that go inside to righties. It could be curveball. This fastball that generally is all right. It's not a pitch that you just throw in the zone and like you dominate or something, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not that kind of pitch. He did have just one, 11% ICR, but it's like you had one ICR and 9 balls in play. Sure, but that's not who's going to read into that. I'd be a little tepid here just because I also think there's Chase McDermott, who is way filthier, but less command in the wings. I also have heard lots of rumors and whatnot about Baltimore adding another.
There's no way they don't. There's just, right. I refuse to believe. So that I'm glad you hit on that. Cause you mentioned Chase McDermott, maybe coming up and taking Povich's spot. Both of them push off to the side. If you're looking long-term, and Nick and I both try to tell folks, maybe don't look so long-term focused on the here and now, but if you are trying to map out things, I don't think either of them are really going to be around. They're going to go pick up guys to get some depth going. I don't think that the Povich nor McDermott are the answer there. By the way, I do want to put a little bow on the Atlanta situation. They've been really struggling since May 1st against righties. They are 26th in WOBA.
Oh, wow.
So that's a month plus now that they're just really not crushing righties. So go in eyes wide open. Atlanta can still get you on any given night, but for me that makes the Povich one a pretty
well. I mean, he's a lefty, to be fair.
Look,
I do this all the time with guys.
There's a handful of guys that I always just botch their handedness.
I think this is, I mean, my
they're 23rd against lefties, though. They're 23rd against lefties, so it's not much better.
I mean, okay
so the Atlanta offense is struggling. no, you were right. As soon as you said it, I knew that I had biffed it, but the Atlanta offense is just struggling. So anyway, I didn't mean to derail on that. I just wanted to point out that the numbers are there.
The one counter to that is, of course, is that we don't expect Mallison to be this slow. We don't expect Riley to be the slow and so on and so forth. So at some point it's going to just flop.
But Acuña ain't coming back. So
you don't know if that's going to be tonight, next week. We don't know that.
Yeah.
With Cade Povich short term, I understand if he's still sticking around to this, it looks like they kind of want to go six as much as they can to try and give Bradish some rest. I understand Grayson don't want to push him too far. I mean, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think every team should be a six-man rotation. I think that should be a mandate for all teams that's how you help the whole elbow situation.
With all these injuries, yeah, that is something that could be done pretty quickly that might at least have a little bit of help.
Right.
So I'm with you there. Like it, because everything else takes so long, starts from the junior leagues and up. If you want to see something that might have at least a positive impact right away, I do think six is off rip.
It also, I mean, here's the thing. You just make it so whoever starts the game cannot pitch again
for until, X number of days.
Yeah. That's just that. And that helps with the opener stuff too, if they want to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. Now they could say, well, what if like they have to pull him because he had like a 40 pitch first inning or something like that. You can probably put in some mandate for like, okay, if they pitch X amount
or rain delay that,
yeah, whatever hours,
that takes them out, exceptions, you know,
but yeah, you know, like that's the general rule. And if you want to do some distinction between opener and not, you could probably add that language in there too. But that's the way I see it. So I'm all for it if that's what Baltimore wants to do. When you have Cole Irvin and also Albert Suarez at the back end of it, it's possible that Kujovic is just better than Albert Suarez too. So just keep in mind with all of this, it's not the best matchups necessarily, because there's also maybe Dean Kramer coming back. But if he doesn't, then it's the Yankees after it for Kujovic. I think
hard you pass. Just kind of,
yeah, you stand away from that one for now. I do want to quickly hit on the potential ones, because
yes,
you know, I do want to get to the stuff from last week, all the games that we do. But the major ones, I mean, you mentioned also Spencer Howard, who's kind of being okay. I don't care about Spencer Howard personally. I know he was a name like 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Exactly. San Francisco gets credit. You know, anytime they're doing something with somebody, we give a little extra eye to it. I'm not really there on Spencer Howard. I just wanted to bring him up in case people were like, are you guys getting intrigued by that? Neither of us are really particularly intrigued. If he keeps doing it, I'll come back around and revisit. But right now, you're not going to see me get too much hype going for Spencer Howard. And in fairness, just so you know where my bias is, I didn't quite like him when he was a big-time prospect either.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I knew nothing about him. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't want to go like full confirmation bias.
For the Phils, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can understand if this all comes together. Oh, you're not doing it. Okay, never mind. but prospect pedigree doesn't matter. Okay, anyway. I'm just joking around, guys. There are seven other guys. There's four who have all made appearances this year in the majors who are currently not in the majors, or maybe one is. And there are two who are, I think, the other majorish names that people might be considering this year. So there's Nick Mastrini, who I'm just going to go straight past here. Actually, good, a legitimate slider and four-seamer shape that is amazing. The dude can't locate right now.
Correct.
Thing is, Mastrini is not really known for like really bad control, right?
This isn't, I call him Nick Strini, by the way, like you did that. You combined his name.
Oh, what did I say? Nick Strini?
Yeah, no, that's his name
I'm
from now on.
I'm going to be doing that moving forward. That, yeah,
that's 100% his name. Yep. It's locked. Go ahead.
I mean, in the minors, it was like 11%, 13% walk rates a bit.
But so then maybe there were some good ones. About this, well, there were ups and downs, though, with the walk rates.
And that's the thing. I feel like Nick Strini is dealing with just the yips a little bit of being a rookie. And once Nick Strini actually gets a proper opportunity again, if he actually is like a one walk, two walk guy a game, yeah, Nick Strini is kind of great. I don't want people to forget about him just because he did, I don't know, a 3.90 ERA and a 2 WHIP with a 21% walk rate so far this year.
And I agree with that, by the way. I like Nick Strini, over when he was with the Dodgers. And so when they got him, pardon me, I was like, I was like, okay, that's a good scoop. And they are putting the makings of something together here in Chicago. It's going to take time, obviously. But, you know, we talked about Thorpe earlier. They got Crochet right now. I do think they should trade Crochet. But with Nastrini,
Thorpe, I believe, of Crochet is the reason.
And they
why,
can
right?
get a mint with his health.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be part of their next great team. Get the mint at the deadline. But yeah, I do like Nick Strini. I agree. Keep him on your radar. And he could be a summer pickup, like an August pickup or something when he figures some things out. Nick Strini. It's actually Nastrini, just so people know. But we're going to call him Nick Strini.
there's also Max Meyer coming back this week.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember from the beginning of the year, he had 17 innings of a 2.12 ERA and a 0.82 whip. Slider first guy, 21% swing strike rate on that with 49% usage and a 63% strike rate is absolutely bliss in that short sample. If he does return this week, which it looks like it could happen with Weathers now dealing with a finger injury. And by the way, the whole Marlins rotation, let's think about this. Yuri Perez done, Edward Cabrera, Braxton Garrett at least is back, I guess. Trevor Rogers, I guess, is back, but you have also Ryan Weathers now out. AJ Puck is out. What is obviously Sandy Alcantara, Jesus Lizardo likely gone by August.
It's a nightmare.
We're seeing all these ridiculous changes inside of Miami, all these opportunities happening. And here's Max Meyer likely getting an opportunity this week. Are you in on the Max Meyer train?
I am. I love Max Meyer. He's somebody I really am a fan of, though. I will say at the beginning of the year, I said, hit me in 25. I didn't want to deal with what I thought were going to be ups and downs. And then he broke camp and I got a little bit of, you know, finger pointing at me like, well, you said not till 25. I said, there's no universe where this is him up for the entire year. Yeah. 5 minutes later, he got sent down. And because I'm an older, more mature Paul, I did not go dig up those messages and point the finger back at those people. I just kind of, you know, politely in my head was like, yeah, this was why I was concerned. But I think it's going to be more of this up and down, Nick. I don't think they want to put a ton of innings on Max Meyer. The only thing that could have changed that I think is if they were competitive. They, of course, are very, very, very much not. So I think that it is going to be another, maybe at least one period down in AAA and maybe two as they kind of milk his innings throughout the entire year here. Because I don't know that they're going to go more than what, 80 at the big league level, max?
Oh, I mean,
might not even be that many.
Look, I always say that every single pitcher should be able to go 120 innings.
I mean, I agree with you there, but I'm talking about what teams do. Sure. And they, you know, they've got these ideas, and I don't really agree with a lot of them.
They pushed Alcantara, got Tommy John. They didn't push Jerry Perez, they got Tommy John. So,
well, that's the thing, too. Credit where it is due on a little bit. Miami as a whole, over the many years, and I know there's been orgs or regimes that have gone in and out, but as an organizational principle, they generally push pitchers a little bit more than a lot of other organizations. That's why the Yuri Perez was a little bit surprising, you know, because Fernandez, obviously the big one, they brought him up and it's like, hey, he's got the bullets now, why would we waste them in the minors? So when they brought up Perez, like, okay, here we go. But then they played the full kid gloves game, and like you said, it didn't work,
right?
So
maybe with Meyer, he's gonna be very young when he returns back. Yuri Perez, he's 25 is Max Meyer. So maybe there's more inclination to push him a little bit more.
That'd be great, because he is a college guy. So
it's come back from Tommy John. You know, my rule is 140 innings when you come back from Tommy John is what I've seen.
I'd love if they let him go another 80 plus from here forward.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. The problem with Max Meyer is that it's just a slider. Four-seamer changeup after that. Four-seamer is, to me, not a good pitch. It just doesn't have any of the shape that you want.
Is there any potential for it, or is it too weak?
It's bad. It's under, it's below average extension. It's a 14 IVB, which is bad. It's average, attack angle. It's normal, neutral.
With regards to extension.
Yeah. Yes.
How well can short guys get extension? Cause he's,
it's, well, we've seen short guys like Freddy Peralta get extension.
Yeah.
It's about lower body strength and
flexibility. But is he the outlier, or is it possible for any shorty to get,
I mean, anyone could, but Max Meyer, it's also where you deliver the ball, right? How you actually do that. Max Meyer is a 6.4 extension, a 36th percentile. So it's kind of ish average, below average. I don't really think that's going to improve. And really, when you think of extension, it's just reaction time. So if you see that 94.4 mile per hour fastball, it's probably going to be still around like 94, maybe slightly underneath that.
Exactly.
But IVB is bad. His vert is bad. His VA is average. And maybe he does improve that over time. As of right now, I just see a Wasker rule of good slider, nothing else. And that's
any upside on the changeup for Meyer?
The changeup, what I've seen so far, is kind of the typical thing you see from a changeup is sometimes you execute it well and a lot of times you don't. 50% strike rate thus far this year, 15% usage.
Okay.
It's, without a fastball to really to stand on or really an elite other pitch with a slider, it's just slider, 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 which we've seen like the Anthony Descofani thing of just like 20 million sliders in the zone. And maybe that does work as like a Toby or something. But generally, I'm kind of hesitant to go after a guy like Max Meyer, especially with the shag rug, as I mentioned before.
Sure.
His teammate, Roderick Munoz, is kind of interesting if he does get more opportunities. He is a cutter, four-seamer, sinker, slider guy. There have been times that actually he has decent command, Rodery. I don't want to overlook him. I also don't want to assume that he's going to be great. I mean, 10 earned runs in his last two games, but it was the Dodgers and the Guardians. And the previous two came with 14 strikeouts and 11 innings against the Cubs and Rocky Road with just 3 earned runs. So he's kind of someone that will get overlooked completely, that maybe he has the right matchup. Like, don't run away from Rodery Munoz.
Sure.
Do you have any interest there?
A little. I think that's not completely unfair. I definitely had reliever tag on him coming up. I believe he came up in the Braves.
He system. Came up by, oh, I don't know. I just know that he started in April in the 20s.
Oh, yeah. No. I know that. I meant when he was, he came up through the Braves system and I was, you know, viewing him as a reliever. I think he's expanded his arsenal since then. So that is positive because it really looked like 2 pitches only and like,
sure.
A nothing changeup. So he has kind of, added some arsenal there with Rodery Munoz. So yeah, I think there is some potential relevance against the right matchups, but it probably is going to lean in the deeper leagues. I don't know that you're going to be recommending him too much with your 12 team focus all that often.
Yeah, absolutely. Four seamer and sinker coming in at 95, 96. Not so bad. It's just bad extension, not good at IVB. At least it's like a little flat, but I mean, generally, decent command is the kind of cool thing here, I think, for Rodery. Does lean into front door sinkers actually really well, and then inside to righties, as he tries to with the sinker too. So there is some interesting stuff there. But yeah, I'm with you. 12 teamers is just too risky at the moment. And the other ones is really just Christian Scott. We have seen this year. What are you doing with Christian Scott right now? Are you, because you can add him in TGFBI or your main events at the moment because he was drafted. Maybe, well, he actually had showed up though, right?
He was picked up for those starts, and then if he's recut, now you can go back in and try to time Christian Scott. But I think a lot of people are probably holding, which I would be too. 15 teamers, I'm definitely holding unless I'm in a IL pinch. And that's another thing too. You talk about how we are getting more guys coming up. It's because more guys are going on the IL. Now I will tell you in the main event, held everywhere, 100% rostered. Christian Scott, not available there. So you're not going to see him drop very, very often there. In the TGFBI, Christian Scott is 98% rostered. So maybe three leagues, depending how many leagues there are. There's not going to be that many, but he'll be out there in a couple. And yes, I'd go out and try to time it with him. Now in your 12s and 10s, you're going to see more Christian Scott availability. And while we don't have a great read on when he's going to come back, if I've got a pretty clean reserve roster, or if you have IL spots where you're not having to reserve your injured guys, I think there's some value to it. I thought he showed enough when he was up, Christian Scott. The Mets aren't a great team, but you know, they can win when he starts. I think there is some value there. And as far as like when he's going to come back, the problem is we just don't know. But that's why if you jump now and you hold him, you don't have to be part of the fight to get him when he comes back up. And then everyone's attention is focused on Christian Scott. So yes, I do like him as a stash.
Yeah, in 12 teamers, it's interesting because what happened with Christian Scott is his four seamer just wasn't commanded upstairs well. All of a sudden, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And that's the main thing with him.
Did you get data on his start last week? Because he went down dominating the St. Paul Saints.
Yeah, not quite as good still, though.
Okay, so just good results, not great execution. Exactly. Okay.
That's
Christian Scott,
I hope,
by the way.
Yeah, Christian Scott, I hope that works out for him. But yeah, in 12 teamers, I think the second that he comes back, you're going to be wanting to roster him. There's three more I do want to talk about. Of course, we want to get to our games, but we'll do that after this break. So Shane Boz, what are we doing here? The reports from the minors, not great. Last start was better for Shane Boz, but we're still feeling a little weird about Boz at the moment.
You know, and I felt weird about him in Arizona, and I got bullied by you, Justin, and Jason about it. So you know what? I'm going to actually call it out.
I was like,
absolutely bullied. I was shoved into a locker. I was double wedgied from the front and the back. I'm still recovering from that for simply being concerned about it. No, I'm just teasing, of course. But no, I did have some concerns about him just coming off the injury. That's all. It's nothing. I like Shane Boz. In fact, the Arizona Fall League is where I discovered and learned about Shane Boz. I got to watch. I mean, I didn't honestly discover. Yeah. I knew he was a big time prospect. Yeah. But I remember watching him. It was so impressive. And this was back when he was still with Pittsburgh. Sorry, Pittsburgh 2019? Fans. But yeah,
That was when he was a Ray. But you
it would be 18. It would be 18 then.
Yeah.
So I do like Boz, and when he comes up, I'll be interested. I just didn't want to draft him anywhere, whether it was DCs or not, and people were willing to draft. It was 19. Never mind. Maybe he was already a Ray then. Pardon me. I had it wrong on that one with Boz, but no, I'm not. If he rights the ship in the minors enough to get called up, obviously, I'll be interested in Boz. But as it stands, I'm not trying to stash him anywhere. I just don't have hopes for this year. I think it's going to be too volatile. And you know, one bomb can erase three good starts. So I just don't see what I'm latching onto with Boz for 25 or for 2024 specifically. I'd rather try to do a buy low in like a dynasty or a keeper where I'm maybe not competing this year, and I try to get Shane Boz for pennies and then see what happens in 25. So that's where I'm at with Boz.
Yeah, it's very possible it just turns into a cherry bomb. I mean, what we saw last was Shane Boz having in 2021 having an absurd fastball slider mix. I mean, both of those pitches were just crazy good PLV marks. Then 2022 went under the knife and it wasn't the same stuff. And then we didn't see him at all last year. And the reports so far are that the four seamer is not matching 2021 levels quite yet. And that's unfortunate. I mean, it's still going to be a really good slider. Sure. It's just, is a four seamer going to overwhelm? And if the four seamer overwhelms, then that's a really good two pitch mix. And that's kind of like a Strider. And to be fair, command was generally very good with Boz too, which was what was more appealing to me than say like Taj Bradley, for example. Mm-hmm. However, we don't know at this point. It is a dart throw, and I don't like stashing for dart throws where we just don't really know completely. We could just see him at any moment though. And if you're on your team and you're like, all right, let's see what to do. You know, let's see if I have a roster spot. Do we do this or not? I think that's a good transition to two more, which is Cade Horton and Jackson Jobe. Everything I've seen about Cade Horton means I'm just out completely. As far as just his AAA numbers, his the pitches themselves are not really impressing me. The Cubs at the moment don't have necessarily a massive need to go and promote Cade Horton. But then Tyone was telling me, he was like, look, I love Cade Horton. I love that he has the right mentality of a pitcher, as opposed to a lot of them are just like, I'm good, I'm just going to do whatever. He's a guy who just keeps texting Tyone about all these questions and trying to
wants to learn and get better. So, yeah.
So that does make me feel more encouraged long-term about Cade Horton. But I think in 12-teamers, I'm not really stashing him at the moment. Are you?
No, I don't think you should be stashing Cade Horton in 12-teamers right now. I will play the wait-and-see game. And if that means I miss out because somebody wants to take the early shot, hats off to them and good luck to them. Because I like Horton as a long-term. I am intrigued by him. I think he's a great prospect. But he did go to Oklahoma too, so I am bound as a Texas Longhorn to, kind of hate him a little bit. But I'm trying to fight through that bias. No, sure, I don't see a ton with him this year, and I also don't think that the Cubs want to put their hopes on him. I think they're another team that has to go out and get, even if it's more like mid level fourth starter types. I think they need to fill the reserves with guys like that. I don't think they can turn to Horton and save him. Maybe. But he hasn't looked good since coming up to AAA. I'm curious if you've seen anything. Well, obviously, you don't have the AA data, but the dynamics of his walk rate, and they're both tiny, tiny samples, so I don't want to get too hung up on this with Horton, but it's gone from 1.1 walks to 5.5.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, like, was he just beating up AA because he was, you know, too good for that level, and then now he gets to AAA and it's just way too tough? Or is it just small sample? It probably is just that, but are you seeing anything that... is there a command and control concern with Horton that keeps you away? Because you said you've seen some things that make you not be.
Well, I haven't looked at the individual games, but I am doing that right now just to see if there's like one or two bad games that are just making that walk rate terrible. And yeah, it's just two games, four walks, and everything else is 0-1. So I wouldn't really put that there. I would actually even still consider Horton as one of those kitchen sink guys.
Okay.
And that might be the appeal of him, is that a kitchen sink with something good. But the four-seamer to me, from what I've seen, isn't actually that great. I'm going to be stepping away from Cade Horton. And by the way, you heard it here first. Tyler Anderson is going to be heading to the Cubs, according to Paul Spohr.
I mean, that's exactly the kind of guy I'm talking about. Yep.
You heard it here first. All right. So one more guy, of course, is Jackson Jobe. And Paul, of course, is celebrating because he's a Tiger fan. And he's right on the verge of making his first AAA start after, or making his first minor league start, I should say, after the hamstring injury.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much in the realm of, for your 12 teamers, especially your head-to-head leagues, that Jackson Jobe should really be stashed at this point. We get asked all the time, like, all right, who's the next one after Skeens and Jones, right? Who's the one that actually is going to matter? It's Jackson Jobe. There 100%. Is no one else who's clear about this. And when August 1st arrives, you are going to be so dang happy you have Jackson Jobe on your team. And honestly, you might be happy by July 1st, even.
Yeah, it could be sooner.
You know,
But
because you have Maeda dealing with some abdominal things, you have Flair with the lower back. Now Casey Mize isn't looking good at all. Matt Manning hasn't been a good replacement. Like, it's just Scooble and Reese Olsen really that are just absolutely a rock here. Hopefully Flaherty is too with the back stuff. But yeah, Job could just show up in like 2 weeks. Like, yeah, one AAA start, you look good. All right, get up there, buddy. You know?
Yeah, we could totally see that. But then you mentioned August 1st, because if the Tigers don't turn things around and get back in the mix a big time, then Jack Flaherty's gone and Jackson Job would absolutely take his spot there.
Right.
So I agree. Has to be stashed everywhere. I think even in a 10-teamer, you're trying to find a way you can stash him, because it's all about the superstar potential in the shower leagues. The Tyler Andersons of the world, while I do have an affinity for them and I think that there is value, that's because I play in deeper leagues where their value is upped.
Sure.
In those shower formats, you're trying to consolidate talent to as much star power as possible. The only guy, like you said, close to Skeens and Jared Jones is Job, and that's not just Tigers bias. Get ready, because we don't know when he's going to come up, because the Tigers could be doing the double A thing to kind of keep him under wraps there and then just skip Toledo and go right to the majors when he's ready. So I totally agree with you there, Nick.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I was even saying the preseason I prefer Job over Skeens, because Job's it's crazy. He has like four pitches.
He's unreal. So nasty. I'm so
I didn't
excited.
Know about the splinker then, I will say, for Skeens. I wasn't totally aware of that one, so I get it, but my gosh. So I'm like on the fence. In 12 teamers right now. I'm so torn, because I don't really have one roster spot and I need hitting more than pitching, but man, I see Job out there. I'm like, I don't want to be the guy that doesn't get Job.
I know you don't, but don't let that FOMO make you make a bad move. I'm glad
trust
you brought
me,
this
I haven't
up
done
because
it yet.
If you don't have the spot, folks, then it's a luxury item. You have to have the spot. And yeah. I think that is so critical. People get caught up stashing and then they're taking zeros because they don't have anybody to replace. I see this in daily leagues a lot too.
Oh yeah,
you need to be able to leverage the guys that are off for the day and get those extra points in there. And if you can't do that because you're stashing prospects, you're really setting yourself behind. So you might not be the right team to do it. Have the right judgment for yourself.
Yeah, 100% right. Good stuff there. We're going to transition into doing our games. Okay, so we have from last week. Oh my gosh, it's still so close. do we update the scoreboard as well here?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So tell us, what happened last week, Spore?
So it ended up being a little bit uneventful, if I'm being honest. We each score a point, and we do that with our streamers, both of our guys coming through. And don't forget, or don't worry, folks, if you saw Hogan Harris and you're like, uh-oh, he didn't go against Toronto, or he didn't go against Seattle, he went against Toronto, Nick messaged right away and said, I'm still fully on board. Give me the Toronto start and gets 17 points. That's a cash. You need at least 10 points for these streamers that are 20% rostered or less on Fantasy Pros. And I had an Oakland A as well, JP Sears. We were both picking on Seattle. Nick caught the bad end of it, but it ended up working out. I also got the win there with JP Sears getting 21 points. He was 8% rostered. Then we did their sit of the week, 50%+ at Fantasy Pros, and they have to be 10 points or fewer. We got crushed. Yusei Kikuchi versus Baltimore, 25 points. And again, we like being wrong here because we don't want to root against guys.
Yeah.
And then I was saying Ranger Suarez, A, with the comebacker, B, going to London, which didn't play as crazy offensively as it did previously. They probably took some squishy balls there to make sure that didn't happen. But we said, sit those guys if you want to get ahead of anything and try to be real crazy and sit some potential studs. Those were the two that we had. They scored 25 and 19 points respectively. So no points there. Star of the week, which is kind of a super version of the streamer where they're 50% or under at Fantasy Pros, but you have to score at least 15 points. We went with Brian Bayo at the White Sox, which is a really nice pick. -3. Brutal outing for him. Don't know what happened there. And then Ben Brown. I went with him 36% at Cincy, just 7 points for him. That's a zero.
Yeah.
And then go ahead. I'm sorry.
With Bayo, changeup is not there. And it's annoying. It'll get back. It'll come back, guys.
I totally agree there. But it does highlight how when a pitcher doesn't have their good stuff, even the worst team can clip them. And that's what happened to Bayo there against the White Sox. And then the one game matchup was really disappointing because it didn't happen. Luis Castillo did not pitch against Reagans. Reagans pitched beautifully, scored 27 points.
Yeah, he did.
But because there was a DNP for Reagan or for Castillo, Nick doesn't get a point there and we just call it a wash. So just the points on the streamers. And I have a 1 point edge still, 19 to 18 going into this week.
Unreal. Man, you're lucky.
You're lucky. You're darn right. I'm lucky because I don't think that, you know, the way Castillo pitched against KC in the game that he did pitch, I certainly wouldn't have beaten Reagans. He got cooked.
No. All right. So we are going to talk about this week's games, of course, and we're going to talk about them after this break. All right. So your streamer this week, 20% rostered or less, who is that?
I'm going back to the well with picking on Seattle. I'm sorry, folks, but we got to do it. We got to be smart, right? You pick on certain teams. So I'm taking Dane Dunning, just 15% rostered at Seattle. You know, he's a guy that you don't think of for strikeouts. And that's the reason that we pick on Seattle, in case folks are wondering, like, why do you guys keep picking on Seattle? They are striking out like crazy. They are just not hitting well at all. 28% strikeout rate against right-handers, easily the worst in baseball. A full point clear of Oakland. So that's what leads me to Dane Dunning. And I also like Dane Dunning. He's a guy that I just have always kind of liked there. So Dane Dunning, 15% at Seattle. You're staying in Texas with it as well. And I'm going to be able to watch your guy pitch. Oh, I'm going to this game.
Oh, Ridley. Oh, that's fun. So Dane Dunning, I totally get that one. As long as he gets enough sinker called strikes and sliders and cutters working enough, then there you go. Spencer Arrighetti against your Tigers. Mm-hmm. Spencer Arrighetti, I don't really love it, honestly, but because Spencer Arrighetti, I want it to work. He just hasn't commanded everything properly yet. We haven't seen that one game where, bam, there's a four-seamer at the top, and bam, here's all the secondary pitches. But generally, he does well enough with everything that it should work. And the Tigers, I just don't have any sort of faith being like, no, we are going to be amazing.
We're going to punish you for your mistakes. Yeah, right.
Solid win chance as well. So I think Spencer Arrighetti, unless he's going against Scooble, I don't think this is a Scooble start. This might be the first start.
Nick.
Who is it?
It's Kenta Maeda. No, Nick. Oh, I see. It's Scooble Verlander on Saturday, and we're going on Sunday.
Oh, I'm so sorry, buddy. At least you can watch that on TV.
I know, but I'm heartbroken, dude.
I'm so sorry, buddy.
But Saturday work.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that can be the pick of the week, because
I put it on the list, but then I put the little smirk emoji next to it because, like,
yeah, there's no way.
I love Verlander, but I can't take Verlander against Scoob, so I'm sorry.
So I got Arrighetti, you have Dane Dunning. Who is your sit of the week?
So my sit of the week, 50% or higher at Fantasy Pros, is Cutter Crawford, and this one I actually do agree with. You know, a lot of times we say we wouldn't really necessarily do these, but if you're talking DFS or if you're in a shallow league and you can really afford to try to curate everything, then maybe you could do it. This one I did do. So I put my money where my mouth is. I benched Cutter Crawford in a 15 teamer because he's facing the Yankees and they just absolutely terrify me. You pair that with the fact that Crawford's been off lately and just simply has not been pitching well enough. And there you go. That's what led me to make the move. What do you think about that with Crawford against the Yankees? And what do you think has been going on with him lately?
Well, with Cutter Crawford, I think he's three pitches. They're all good, but he isn't really harnessing all of them in tandem lately. And this is kind of the thing I saw in the beginning of the year was that Cutter Crawford doesn't really have the leading pitch. That is, I think it might be the cutter at times, but he doesn't really have that pitch that says, okay, cool, this is my powerhouse, this is my foundation. It's kind of all three working together. And because of that, the string can get broken a bit and all of a sudden the whole thing falls apart. So I do think that Cutter Crawford is still solid and could get through this game against the Yankees. But yeah, I would be benching him. I changed my set of the week. I realized I had a good one. And I thank gosh, because I didn't really want to bench this guy.
Okay, go ahead. But I want to be clear. Still fully in on Cutter Crawford. Beyond this, I'm just sitting him here.
Yeah. And by the way, he gets the Phillies tonight, but we're not going to choose a game that you guys are going to listen to this and already passed. But
yeah,
I imagine
making any moves off
sitting that one too for Cutter Crawford against the Phillies. So originally I couldn't find a good one, guys. And I was like, all right, fine. I guess I'll do George Kirby against the Rangers, which I don't really want to do. He's on the verge of aces going to ace. And like, he's just starting to change how he approaches it with four seamers being saved and sinkers upstairs and sliders down and away. But then again, I haven't really seen him do it for a long time. And I thought maybe this might be a cute thing to do. Same with like Logan Gilbert. But no, I found one. It's also against the Rangers. It is Walker Buehler. Going Wednesday night to 75% rostered. Walker Buehler looks lost. Oh my gosh, does he look right now? And his stuff is still good. And it's very possible that Walker Buehler gets this going tomorrow. But I'm terrified of this start. It's just not the Walker Buehler that we remember quite yet.
Correct.
It could work. Absolutely. I have him in the questionable starts here for my streaming rankings, but yeah, I'd be terrified of this Walker Buehler start.
Yeah, I'm not cutting him anywhere because he's Walker Buehler still. And like Nick points out, the stuff is still there. It's just not crisp. And he seems like kind of in between on things. We talk about sometimes when hitters are in between pitches, you know, they're just guessing wrong and things aren't going well. He's kind of the pitcher version of that, where he just doesn't seem to kind of have confidence in what he's doing out there. Probably, you know, due to the coming off his second TJ. So it is nerve wracking with Walker. I've got Buehler held everywhere. But yeah, I'm not necessarily starting him in shallower formats against the tough matchups right now.
Great. So your star of the week and star of the week, as you mentioned, is kind of like your super streamer, mm-hmm. Under 50% rostered. I like to consider it as, hey, after the start, this is where the hype and the conversation is going to be. Everyone's going to be whispering, oh, hey, what about this guy? What about this guy?
And like, we're holding the guy more instead of streaming him.
Yeah. Like, oh man, is this a real thing? Is this it? That's, mm-hmm. That's why I'm going for. So we have to get at least 15 points, not the 10 points of the previous ones. Who is your star of the week?
So this guy's already reached that threshold in 15 teamers of like, hey, now we're holding him. But I think Eric Fetty's on the cusp of getting that sort of love in 12s and 10s, even though he's part of the White Sox. So I'm going with Eric Fetty. He's been pretty nice in his return, 49% just under the wire there at Arizona. And, you know, pitching pretty well lately. Nice 7-inning start against the Mariners. Only 4 Ks. We talk about how everyone's getting Ks against him. He only got 4, but he did go 7 innings, a 1-run ball. So you're certainly not upset with what Fetty's been doing. I've just been impressed with him. And frankly, if you can pick him up, even if you don't want to start him a ton, I would pick him up now just because his win context could change greatly, because there is absolutely no single universe that he remains on this White Sox team past the deadline. He is 31 years old, folks. Yeah, sure. So there's just no way. He'll be on the Cubs with Tyler Anderson, but that's fine. That's still a better win probability than the White Sox. You know, but he does have 4 wins. Where?
I know where he's going to go.
Give me.
I'm putting it down right now. Eric Fetty is going to be in Baltimore.
I knew you were going to say that. I swear I incepted it because I almost said it to at the same time you did.
I love it. I mean, the reason I say that, I mean, maybe it's Garrett Crochet, but the reason I go for that is I think actually the Orioles, I mean, look at the rotation for them. You have Bradish, Grayson, and you have Corbin. I mean, really, you do need a lefty. You need Garrett Crochet. Just throw down.
Crochet would be here's such a perfect fit.
Here's Curse Dad. Just go ahead. The way I see it is for the playoffs. Actually, this was in the conversation chat about like Jesus Luzardo being a good fit as a lefty and everything for Baltimore. And I say no, because that is more volatile for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And what you actually want, the things that we see all the time are these like Jose Urquidy silencing the Nationals in the World Series, right? Or like your Kyle Gibson having all of a sudden a great game. You need a Toby. You need a guy that can actually step up and have their best command for a given night, and not one who's going to be a cherry bomb, because those hitters are going to be more locked in and focused and take advantage of more mistakes. So you have to be able to not throw those. And Fede's a command guy. So I actually think that that fits what you need for a playoff rotation more than the studly potential of a Luzardo, because that can lose you a series as opposed to a Fede that kind of keeps you there. Which is
I like that. Yeah, that's a great call.
But yeah, Fede, I mean, they need a lefty, so it should be Crochet, fine. Or Tyler Anderson. It's just all Tyler Anderson and Fede.
It would just be such a good fit. And they could hammer, you know, they could trade another 2 guys. But I like what you said with Kerstad, who I'm a big fan of too. Kerstad, Crochet, get it done. That's a 1-for-1.
Easy, there it easy. Is. Easy. My star of the week is going to be JP Sears, because JP Sears should be actually talked about from last week.
My streamer from last week getting elevated to star of the week. Let's go.
That was like the best game I've ever seen from JP Sears. Sorry, I know it's late. I'm so sorry. Fireside chat. Fireside chat. Oh, JP Sears. Oh, what? Did you see that? What a darling he was.
He really
four was. Four streamers were upstairs and sinkers were well spotted and changeups were down and arm side and the slider and the sweeper were glove side, and he actually commanded his stuff. I don't see that. I don't see JP Sears actually execute all of his pitches.
And he took full advantage of Seattle.
Oh my gosh. It was beautiful. Now he gets Minnesota. They're okay.
It's a big opportunity. It's a nice opportunity though to go into Minnesota, build off the momentum that Sears took from this past game, and show that he can start to string some games together. Cause that's the thing you talk about. Like, you rarely see him, you know, stay in a groove. And it does feel that way where, you know, you're always around the corner from like a 4-5 earned run outing. And that is frustrating. It's not, I don't think it's quite cherry bomb. He does have a 7 on his ledger, but that was at Baltimore. You should have never been starting him there anyway. But I do get some of those nerves. I like Sears. I liked him as a Yankees prospect. So I am very intrigued. I liked that you bumped him up to star of the week this week after I had him as my streamer.
I mean, I hope so. I hope so.
What's last our matchup, Nick?
Yeah, we had some fun ones to consider: Freddie Peralta, Hunter Green, Tanner Houck, and Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, and Kyle Bradish. But here's the thing, guys. We had a marquee matchup last week that was taken. Mm-hmm.
It was taken. Not fair.
And here we go. Corbin Burns versus Zach Wheeler. Who do you got, Sporer?
I'm going to go ahead and take Burnsy. So, you know, I take a little bit of the short end of it, but I'm never mad having Burns, okay? And he's my ace on my main event team, so it just felt fitting that I would take the guy that's, you know, that I'm trusting this year for my fantasy leagues. Love Wheeler. He is my number one right now. Actually, Scuba might have passed him.
Really? I still have Wheeler.
I think he's gonna get I have no problem with that. He was number one the last time I checked. I have to see if I don't think I've changed it. Unless I did a late night hazy, I got to put Scuba number one. But no, but Burns is my three. So it's like, it's not that far. This is 1v3 for me. Listen, I know Burns' Ks have been underwhelming. I don't care. He is still as bankable as it comes. I still have full confidence in him. Win potential through the roof. This should be a banger matchup. I really hope we get what we deserve as a baseball community. Both of these guys going 7+, 2-3 runs scored combined, and what, 18, 20 strikeouts. I really want that.
I'm not going to go with that just because, yeah.
Because Burns might not hold up his end of the bargain. No, I understand. I understand. That's what I'm saying. That's what we deserve, though. That's what we deserve.
We do. You want to know something funny, Spore?
I do.
I mean, first of all, yes, I have Wheeler at number one. I have Burns at 6.
I knew when you looked at that way, I knew you had him lower. 6 is fine. I mean, like, who's the 5 then?
Max Fried.
I'm sorry, the top 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wheeler, Glasnow at 2.
Yeah.
Scooble, 3. Chris Sale at 4. And Max Fried at 5.
No issues with any of those. Yeah. Let me see what my
rank close. I have Riggins at 7 right now. He's looking at him. Good slider and cutter.
He's right there. Let me see here. So I have, oh, I'm actually a gigantic liar. Sorry. I forgot about the update I did. I did do it over the weekend and it was a late night update. Wheeler's actually 2 behind Glasnow. Scooble. I have Glasnow.
Oh, behind Glasnow. Oh,
okay. Yeah. So I have Glasnow, Wheeler, Scooble, Burns. So Burns is 4. So I'm a giant liar. And I still have Reagan's at 5. And then
I got the Freed start probably that you didn't of the 13 days.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. So he's moving up for sure. And I'm going to publish a new one. So I kind of keep them updated this year. I used to wait and it was so stupid. So now I am kind of doing it weekly, just not like you publishing it weekly, but I am.
Yeah.
I mean, keeping it updated.
Right. But there we go. So it's going to be Wheeler versus Burns. Can't wait for that one.
Can't wait.
Cannot wait. But that is going to do it. Oh my gosh. Look at this. Oh, I can see the sun rising already. I couldn't believe it. Completely. Look at us. How did we get here? Spore, what are you working on this week?
Same old right now. We just had a big kind of content event at OTP where we released our tournament cards that you can get from winning tournaments. So that was a big project I had been working on. So that's kind of behind me. So back to the daily SP charts, got the podcast. And like I said, I am working on my next update, which I think I'm going to publish next week. I kind of like to do them in the middle of a month. Nice. So yeah, I think I'll really be getting on those in earnest over the next couple of days here so that they can come out maybe next Monday so that we can do another rankings deep dive, you know, because we want to have like one fireside a month that we can get into with the rankings. So we'll see how that goes. But and then just streaming on Twitch on occasion. Not very often, but on occasion.
Beautiful. We've got, we had some player page updates where our game logs are better than ever.
Better? How did they get better?
We made the speed, they're instant now. So you can do splits for lefties and righties between pitches.
Oh my God, that is.
Our game log details even better with stuff being added per game.
Blistering heat.
So definitely go check that out. We also have multiple seasons now inside the game log, not just the current one. With my SP roundups from 2021, 2022, 2023 are in there as well.
That's incredible. No, I love so that.
You can go check that out. Just click on any sort of row and you'll see the SP roundup that I have. Also, of course, as I mentioned, is the minor league PLV cards are live and we're working on the the hitters component of that as well, which I think is going to be so valuable. We should have an update for that next week. I mean, yeah, definitely check all that stuff out. But Spore, that's going to do it for tonight. Thank you all so much for joining us. On the behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and it's always fun talking with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.